Action Park Media.
Let's get a mic check here. 1, 2, 1, 2. Episode 89. No gruffs given. Badges? We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges. Alfonso Bedoya, a.k.a. Gold Hat, the treasure of Sierra Madre. Episode 89, no gruffs given. Kylie Jenner is pregnant with baby number 2. Thank God. Thank fucking God. President Joe Biden was in New Jersey, and the reception was not a warm welcome. All right? It was not a warm welcome for Joe. Justin Trudeau had gravel thrown at him in Canada. I'm just wondering, when are these politicians going to realize that they're not very liked? Like, have you ever had fucking gravel thrown at you? I mean, if it happened one time, you would start to question some of your behavior. But these people are just out of control. They are out of fucking control. Now, Joe went home to Delaware for the weekend, and the White House wouldn't release the visitor logs. I want to know who's coming to see Joe. Honestly, I want to know if Hunter's coming over. I want to know if the whole gang's coming over, or if he just has a quiet weekend and watches documentaries. Could you imagine? I mean, he went home for the long weekend. Wasn't doing anything that was on the record. Nobody knows what went on, who went over. He might have just sat around and got fat. Fucking world's imploding. He takes 3 days off. It could be. I mean, you never know. Seriously. And it is incredible, the reaction to Joe Rogan. And by the way, if I haven't told you about Pretty Litter, then shoot me, because Pretty Litter is the most advanced litter in every way. It changes color to help you detect early signs of potential illness, urinary tract, kidney issues in your fucking cat. Now, I need to go on the record and say that I've had a listener have issues getting his Pretty Litter delivered. I don't know if that's still going on. This is like the fourth or fifth time I've done this ad for Pretty Litter, and nobody has said anything. So I'll just keep ripping it. Basically, Pretty Litter is a technologically safe and advanced cat litter. And if you want some, you go to prettylitter.com, use the promo code Sean for 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code Sean for 20% off. Episode 89, no gruffs given. So Joe Rogan, all right? So Joe gets COVID, and the whole world starts, well, not the whole world, but all the crazies start talking about ivermectin. And they just start reporting on it being a horse dewormer. Dewormer. So that is the narrative now. Ivermectin won a Nobel Peace Prize. It stops people from going blind in remote rivers in God knows where. Does all kinds of crazy shit. That's good. But people, and it's actually, I don't even know if it's true. It's a parasite eater. So in horses, they give it to horses because horses get worms. So why not give them ivermectin? It works. Just like it works differently in humans. But you see what's going on with the media. We don't even need to talk about it. But they really wanted Joe Rogan to die. And they're really upset that he beat COVID in 3 days. Now, I don't know why fucking Rogan did what he did. I don't know why he came out and said and named off all these cool things that he got done to beat COVID. I didn't even know I had it. We were in the middle of a move. I didn't have time to have fucking COVID. Okay? That's how I beat it. I just blew right through it. Now, Nash was sick. Hillary was banged up. But not that bad. I mean, it was like they had the flu. But Rogan goes on this whole fucking rant talking about all these doses and mononucleosis fucking drips that he got. All kinds of stupid shit. He should have just said, you know what? I'm going to steam and have cold baths. And I'm going to beat this thing. I'm going to go for a run. That's what Sean did. He just fucking ran the thing into the ground. Because that opened the door and the opportunity for him to become a meme with all these horse fucking worm memes. I mean, it's so unoriginal. Do you not see what's happening? It's so fucking unoriginal. Find your voice. Find your backbone. Get original. Start seeing through this shit and voicing your fucking displeasure with the bad material floating around. It's so weak. It is so fucking weak. You won't be weak though if you go to HelloFresh.com/14Sean and use the code 14Sean for up to 14 free meals. You won't. You'll get strong because you'll be eating healthy, top-notch food, 50 menu and market items to choose from every week, vegetarian, calorie smart, you name it, HelloFresh has it. Going to go to HelloFresh.com/14Sean and use the code 14Sean for up to 14 free meals. Episode 89, no gruffs given. What was I talking about? Oh, Rogan. Oh, by the way, very interesting interview with Daniel Carcillo, formerly known as Dan Carcillo. So I'll give you the, well, all right. I had no interest in talking to Dan. And then I heard Daniel on the Mike Tyson podcast, and it was a totally new person. I mean, this guy is wildly fucking interesting. He's doing something wildly difficult, and I don't even associate him with his old self. So we have a very, very dynamic conversation. We have a great conversation. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation in this episode, episode 89. I also think you're going to enjoy life better if you shave your pubes, if you fucking manscape, okay? And to do that, you need the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer. It's the world's greatest ball hair, pubic hair, armpit hair, back hair, chest hair trimmer. It is your go-to 100% fail-proof because they have skin-safe technology. You're going to go to manscaped.com, 20% off plus free shipping with the code Sean. That's manscaped.com. You use the code Sean, you get 20% off. Do yourself a favor. I'm not even going to ask you people anymore to help me. I'm just going to say to you, help you. If you're not solid, if you're not lined up, if you're not on the fucking look good, feel good program, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say, but I'm not interested. Not fucking interested. I just move on. And while we're there, you know what? Let's just get it out of the fucking way. Tommy John is North America's most advanced men's underwear brand. The Apollo is Tommy John's newest underwear in the Tommy John selection. Performance grade dry release fabric blend is exclusive to Tommy John. It's their latest comfort innovation and you can't get it anywhere else. So I'm wearing these Apollos. It's like buttery soft butterness on my balls. I wear a brief and I always have and I always will wear a brief. You're going to go to TommyJohn.com/Sean for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Sean, 20% off. Buttery butterness on your balls. That is BBB. Buttery butterness on your balls at Tommy John. Episode 89. No gruffs given. So yeah, Rogan, he fucked up. He fucked up. Naomi Osaka fucked up and she's taking an indefinite leave of absence, which is a very good idea because she doesn't have the head for tennis right now. That is an understatement. This girl is a crying puddle after each press conference. So I would have said if she didn't do it this time, if she didn't say, all right, I'm taking a long leave of absence, then I would have went after her team like I did previously. But she's doing it. She's a mess. These fucking woke athletes nowadays, I mean, they don't make them like they used to. That is a goddamn fact. They don't make them like they used to. All right, episode 89, No Gruffs Given. Let's get right into it. Dan, have you seen Nine Perfect Strangers yet?
I have.
Have you watched the whole entire thing?
So I'm up to speed. What are they, like episode 4?
Are they releasing it weekly?
Weekly.
Okay.
Yeah, every Wednesday my wife was watching it. So it's an interesting depiction of recovery from trauma. I'll say that.
Well, so it's interesting that you say recovery from trauma, and I immediately would say, I think it's an interesting depiction of psilocybin. Psilocybin? How do I say that?
So psilocybin, but it's so it's more so based around, for me, MDMA and microdosing, right? With what they're putting in their shakes.
Yeah.
So two totally different medicinal experience or retreat setting by any means. So
yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. But I do think as a whole, it's really kind of shedding a light on the term microdosing, right?
Mm.
Which I think is a little bit of a foreign phrase for a lot of people right now.
Right. Well, the anomaly about that show is that microdosing is supposed to be sub-perceptual. So that means you're not supposed to hallucinate.
Right.
Right? And actually, MDMA is an amazing, for example, couples therapy medicine, where two people that have issues can talk them out in a very sane matter with little to no high emotional spikes. And it's actually really great for the brain. And so the depiction in that show is definitely interesting. Now, you know, if you add in psilocybin to that equation, what that medicine does is it exasperates us at the forefront of your mind. So the trick or the special sauce about psilocybin is that people that take it with trauma are usually at a point where they actually want to see it, right? And that's what that medicine allows for. So I think that's what you're seeing in that show, where, you know, these flashbacks are happening or these images are coming to these people and they're forced to really deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the so that's not putting like a band-aid on depression, right? That's like getting right down to the root cause of why you are depressed.
Right.
So it's a pretty amazing medicine, man.
So I heard you on the Mike Tyson podcast, and I want to talk about a few things before we get into what you're doing now. So first of all, I think that the interview, it was one of the best episodes that I've heard, because Mike was obviously engaged, very interested, also listening more than talking, which you could tell, like, everybody was dialed in. What I noticed the most was you sounded like a completely different person. And over the course of the interview, I was blown away until a certain moment where you started talking about hockey. And when I look at you, and I can sum up everything in that interview, like, I know that you are in a completely different place. You're a totally different person. But you were talking about a lot about energies, right? And I'm a firm believer in energies and feeling people's energies. Your energy changed when you started to talk about hockey. And what I want to know is two things. I want to know when you're going to let go of it, because what I heard was that you are still a prisoner to the game in that, in your voice. And I'm not saying this in a critical manner, because I'm saying this like, when are you going to stop letting them control you? Because that's right. What I heard.
Yeah, it's not that simple, right? I'm trying my best to continue to recover. And recovery for me isn't like a straight line to a certain point. So it's not like get in a car, go from A to Z. It's a constant peeling back of just being involved in that culture and becoming a person. For me personally, it doesn't happen to everybody, becoming a person that I regret, right? And doing things that I regret. I did a lot of really good things too, right? I wasn't some monster, some animal. So I'll just say this, right? There's a lot of trauma there that I'm still trying to unpack. This medicine has allowed me to shift most of my perspective of the world, which has really helped me in a lot of areas of my life, like my relationships and obviously business. And then, yes, that relationship to hockey, man, I'm not going to lie to you. It's still tough. Like there's still days when I think about what I went through and then what guys are still going through. It makes me angry still, right? And I want to do something about it. But the best thing that I think I can do or that I did do is like, just remove myself from that, you know, as best I can, right? Like,
I couldn't agree more. But I also want to say to you that I look at all of it as a blessing because you now have found something that you love that you're probably going to do until the day that you die. So this journey that you've come on, I would say, and you know, it's easier for me to say this, but I think you should be thankful for the trauma because that trauma has now unlocked probably what you'll say on your deathbed as your true love.
Yeah. So the word that comes to mind when I think about that is like necessary, right? Like all of this, my whole life, I look back at my whole life and the trauma that I sustained as a minor was necessary to form me into Carbomb, was necessary for me to run like hell from 20 to 25, was necessary for me to break down, ask for help, was necessary to put me on a path 25 to 30. That was a little different, still tumultuous. And then all the suffering afterwards for the better part of 5 years in retirement, trying to recover my brain health. It was just all necessary because now I have the knowledge and I can speak to these medicines that have actually helped transform my quality of life and everything that's happening around me, you know, obviously that's just one tool and I'm doing the work, right? Necessary, but it's definitely, you know, there's days, man, for sure. And there's a lot of those days, right? Where I am thankful. I really am. And all of that was definitely necessary and I don't regret it. But then there's also days where like that pit bull comes out that's still in me, right? That I still use in business. And you still see that like there hasn't been any accountability. And what did me and you always get preached about, right? Is accountability. And so there's still certain things that I do wish to stand up for, maybe in a less intense manner that I still will support, like litigation, because that's really when the most change happens. But for now, what I am focused on is that latter part of the journey that I'm on, which is continuing, first and foremost, my personal recovery, and then getting this message out about, you know, awareness and education on not only TBI, but then mental health and really looking beyond hockey and kind of, you know, leaving that alone for now. And eventually I think there will be a crossroads or what I'm hopeful of, like what I'm building there will have to be. Right. Well, and so, yeah,
well,
man.
Well, yeah. I mean, here's what I think. I think that your full circle is going to be at some point, you're probably going to get paid again by the NHL to, as a research grant or as the official supplier or something. That's what I see in the crystal ball because of that. And I'm glad that you mentioned the litigation. I fucking let it go. Like, who cares? Let those miserable assholes be themselves. They're all going to sink their own ship eventually. Okay. Let them be the Dave Branches of the world. That fucking scumbag just suspended the kid that got drafted by Montreal. He's not going to let him play this year. Like everything they, you know, the kid I'm talking about that went over to Sweden and something happened and
I'm familiar with that.
Branch is not allowing him to play in the OHL this year. You know, every decision that they make is out of wokeness. It's out of not being educated. They're a fucking sinking ship. What they did through COVID, let it go. You are going to end up making money off of them at some point. And I also think that the negative energy is going to hurt you when you go to raise money. There's going to be some 6 degrees of association. I don't think, I hear you so fucking far beyond it.
And you're hitting the nail on the head, man. And I appreciate having these conversations because you're probably one of the, you know, most interesting guys that I've ever come across as far as like being able to reinvent himself away from the game, right? And still keep up appearances, so to speak. But I've actually, so like this is the first time I've said this publicly, but I actually approached the NHL and I dropped my lawsuit. They want me to sign a piece of paper that I don't want to sign. I just want to walk away.
Yeah.
And so that was initiated like 3 months ago, right? I just didn't feel the need to say anything, but that's all part of the process, right? It's all part of like, I definitely got to a point. That being said, like, will I testify what I saw with Steve getting cleared for 4 concussions in 12 weeks with the Hawks? Like, I have to,
well,
right? That's a little bit different, you know?
I agree.
And just to ensure that it doesn't happen to somebody else. And very similar with the class action lawsuit in Canada, man. Just like making sure that these leagues can't audit themselves, right? Because they've proven they can't. So none of this has anything for me to do with money. Just making sure that coming up, if my son decides to play hockey, then and I want to feel good enough to put him into a rink where if something does happen, at least you know he could report it, and it's going to get looked at. So. Third party, just independent, looking over these minors, and that's it, you know. And then I walk away, and I keep doing what I'm doing, you know. And so, that's the plan.
No, right? that's good to hear because I think. Yeah. And by the way, you know, fuck them and their piece of paper. What they should do is they should be the grown up and say, you know what. Let's sit down and talk about what you're doing now and how can we help? Because we're looking long-term to get ahead of, you know, the medicines and everything. And we want our players to be protected and be a part of that. So, but you know, will that happen? Probably not because they are still fucking, you know, angry and resentful and very insecure about their power and their protection and all that shit. So it probably won't. Will it happen one day because you're in a position where you're too successful for them not to listen? Probably. But
yeah.
Anyways. Yeah.
I appreciate you bringing this up. I've talked to Glenn Healy, the NHLAA. I've made my rounds, right? And so now it's just a matter of continuing my head down with like partnerships with like the World Boxing Council, which is really meaningful to TBI, because we know these guys are getting damaged. So, you know, imagine the research we can do with people like that to better protect them before and then rehabilitate after and then for athletic performance, just make sure they're tip top.
All right. So
I didn't think you were going to start with that, but you know what? Nobody's asked me and I appreciate it.
Well, man. I appreciate you telling me and I don't want to talk about it anymore. Now I want to talk about how did this mushroom journey begin? Like I see you have a fucking, you're growing them. Like there's a company take me through the whole process.
So I'm not growing them, but I do have a company. I was growing hemp. So what happened was, when I retired, I was dealing with a lot of symptoms. So the last 7 years, just been reading a lot of medical papers and going to the concussion clinics, you know, brain banks, talking to CT pathologists, concussion pathologists, mox acupuncture, self-deprivation tanks, hyperbaric chamber, spec scan, all the scans that you can get, like just really trying to get a handle on what had happened and then how I can possibly fix it. And, you know, it was 2.5 years ago now, where I was in a pretty bad place. I'd spent a lot of money. I was starting to get hopeless because I thought I'd tried everything. And then, somebody reached out, went to a farm, took an invitation, and ended up being introduced to things like CBD, functional mushrooms like lion's mane, reishi, cordyceps, and then ultimately a psilocybin ceremony. And it couldn't have come at the best time in my life because I was suicidal. I was actively, making plans to kind of unburden my family and friends. And I was in a dark, dark space. And these mushrooms, although it was probably the most difficult 2 hours of my life, it showed me what was wrong. It literally showed me that I was the creator of my own hell. And that, and it was really reminiscent, going back to how we opened up the conversation, but what I was doing at the time, I was just totally enveloped in this negative attack mode space, and it was just came off so wrong. But that's the only way I knew to do it, right? Yeah. And I didn't have the capacity to think through, because really there were parts of my brain that were shut down due to trauma. And a lot of guys experience this afterwards, even sometimes during. And so, I can only describe it as, first of all, this is not an endorsed, this is just my own personal experience. It says I'm not endorsing that people go out and do this in an unregulated fashion. But, a lot of the things were managed for me to have a really positive experience, even though it was difficult. And that happened. And I woke up the next morning. I just describe it as feeling the way I should. For some reason, there was less brain fog, less brain fatigue. I was like excited for the first time since retiring, really. All I wanted to do, I remember, is pick up the phone and call my kids and my wife. And I was isolating so much from everybody throughout the past like year.
This was so, less than 12 hours after you got.
Yeah, this is when I woke up. Yeah. Like, so after we, had the hallucination, and they're just little things, very, very subtle things, right? Mm-hmm. But thoughts that I'd never had. And so I'm like, huh, this is different. And then, days progressed on the farm. I went outside on the third day without my glasses. I just forgot them. And usually that would trigger a headache. And it didn't. So you're just banking all of these things that aren't affecting you anymore, like light sensitivity noise sensitivity. And then I was amazed when I got home, the symptoms just started to either lessen in intensity or all but fall away.
Okay.
And,
Hold on a sec.
Yeah.
So did they explain to you and explain to me, did they give you an insane level dose? Like, is this where they come in and they shock the body? Because we used to do mushrooms when we were, I did mushrooms a lot. The summer after my first year in the NHL, we would buy a gram of mushrooms every weekend. Mm-hmm. We're talking 4 to 6 hour trips. Sometimes they weren't good. If they were good, they were really good, but they weren't 2 hours. So how did they dose you and how much? And did you know how hard you were going to get hit by it?
No, I didn't. So, first of all, just like it was the right set, which means, I had the right intention, right? It was as simple as I wanted to recover my brain health. And then the right environment that we were in, and then it was the right dose, right? So those three things need to be managed, to have a successful ceremony. And it was 5.5 grams. So it was a really big, it was a really big dose.
Just and, for you?
It was, I say 2 hours, the whole ceremony lasted onset to offset, probably four. Mm-hmm. And it was really intense. But when you have these people around that are experienced, that can help guide people through like a difficult time like that, then it becomes a lot easier. So it's much less about recreation, like a gram, and you know, at a keg party or whatever during the summers, or going to a concert and taking half a gram, right? Yeah. Like that's a beautiful experience. You would never be able to do that on this amount, right? It has to be managed. And then that's when you see, usually you see people, these bad trips is either just someone mismanaging dose in the wrong setting, right? With no set, with no intention, right? Yeah. So, so yeah, that's a little bit about, you know, how that, yeah. And then I went home, like, so like I was amazed too, man. Right. So I've been reading studies on concussion and the brain and just like what's needed to rehabilitate. And, like when all these symptoms started to fall away, I was like perplexed for sure. And so then I started to dive into like the actual science of what psilocybin was doing in people's brains. Right. And there was some pretty common themes that I heard where it's like, oh, we're going to, when I went to these clinics, we're going to stimulate brain regions shut down due to trauma, right? We're going to connect the right and left brain hemisphere. We're going to get it talking again. We're going to work some go arounds around all the trauma. We're going to, you know, build these new neurological pathways
and
make these good habits. Just using exercises. Oh. So using exercises and going to a clinic, right? And then that's called neuroplasticity, right? That our brains are adaptable. And then I looked at this 2014 study done on a patient who underwent an fMRI, which basically shows your brain connectivity and brain waves and measures that on a dose of psilocybin. And have you, have you ever seen the two circles of the brains?
Yeah.
I'll send it.
Yeah.
So, and what you see or what I saw was like, okay, this is a cure for traumatic brain injury because I saw right and left brain hemispheres being connected.
Yeah.
I saw stimulation in all different brain regions. I saw something that the clinics could never do, which is actually, you know, intentionally set an intention to recover your brain health, which can happen. I've seen these neuroplastic effects. I've seen, you know, the anti-inflammatory, the antioxidant benefits. Like it was all right there in front of me, and it hit me when I was, wow, this really could be the first approved treatment for traumatic brain injury. There's no approved treatments, right?
Yeah.
So after that, then I just started to like do outreach, and I also stayed on a really like specific regimen of, you know, fasting, making sure I slept, and then this microdose regimen, sub-perceptual dose daily on a very specific regimen, days off, days on, and I continued that for 6 months, and then I retested my brain with a QEEG and then with blood work. So I've been doing that every 6 months since I retired. And for the first time, man, in 5 years, I got back this QEG that didn't have any abnormalities anymore. So I was pretty blown away. And then my blood work came back. My cortisol levels were equalized. And then even my free testosterone was actually optimized. And so I was dumbfounded. So I started outreach, and I started to get connected to like Decriminalized Nature and MAPS, and just started to really get integrated into the community to start offering my story to legislation like Initiative 81 in Washington, D.C., and started going to like MAPS events, and then got to a point where I was confident enough that this could be used as a treatment. And I started to put the pieces of the puzzle in place to create the business that we now have, which is WeSauna Health, and put the innovation into patents and protected it and put a team around me, just like a hockey team of experts in their field. And we're going through, you know, FDA and Health Canada trials to get this regime or this medicine, and this specific regimen approved for TBI.
So explain that to me. You guys don't have a product. You have a system.
So psilocybin is, a Schedule I drug. So that means that there's no medicinal value and that it's highly addictive, which we know both are untrue from all of these studies.
In Canada and in the US?
Yeah. In the US especially, it's actually a Schedule III in Canada, but still scheduled.
Okay.
So
So when I hear about people that say they're microdosing, how are they doing it?
Illegally.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yep. Fuck. Wow.
Yep. So, but like that being said, this is the reason why I testified in Washington, D.C. So right now in Washington, D.C., because Initiative 81 was passed, it's decriminalized. So that does not mean legalization. That right. doesn't mean you can go to a dispensary, but that means that you can take this medicine and possess it for a personal reason yeah. and you won't get prosecuted, right? So in a lot of these states, that's how, that's the guise that people are treating themselves with this medicine under.
It also means you can't go on the internet and find your local, like,
no,
you got to go on the fucking dark web or somewhere to find somebody well, that can perform this. Or
in Canada, yeah. So for the retreats on the big dose side, yes. Like there are really great retreats out there. Like the Netherlands, it is legal to consume truffles. In Jamaica, it's unregulated.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are going there. There are places to get this treatment. You just have to travel. Like I traveled to the high jungle, high Amazon jungle, Peru, Tarapoto, Peru to get ayahuasca. You know, again, another scheduled drug in this country. So you have to seek it out elsewhere. But the way that you get it approved is you create a company, you protect your innovation, and you start going through the process of classifying what this drug is. Usually you start in animal. If it's safe in animal, then you get approval. Granted, you know, once you sit down with the FDA and tell them your plans, if they approve it, then you can open up what's called an IND, investigational new drug application, and you can start putting your drug or regimen, psilocybin in this case, into human beings, healthy individuals first in phase one to see how it reacts. And then favorable data, you will graduate to phase two, and then you can start treating, you know, TBI survivors, and then you have to do it on a bigger level in phase three. And so all of this being said, it's a 5 to 7 year process that costs anywhere between $100 to $250 million. So it's not for the faint of heart. And you know me, I'm a fighter, and we can learn just about anything. And so, like I said, I feel extremely passionate about what this has done for me, what I've seen it do for other people. And so I've, you know, like you said at the beginning of the hour, man, I've dedicated my life to having other people experience this. This is the only way where like somebody can go to a clinic or from a doctor, right? They get a concussion diagnosis. And if they're suffering from like anxiety or depression or any of the symptoms thereof, they will have my hour, Wisana's prescribed medicine that has,
right.
you know, little to no abuse liability and right. Little to no side effects. Okay. Right. So
I see the end game. I see how much it's going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of questions in the interim, where do you guys actually get the psilocybin bin?
Psilocybin. Yeah.
Psilocybin to, test the animals. Like
so it's there are manufacturers that manufacture under DEA licenses and we never touch the psilocybin. It goes from our supplier or manufacturer right to the clinic or the organization that has a DEA license there to work with a Schedule I compound that can put it into these animal models that are FDA approved. To then, you know, read out the data to you, and then you right. can communicate that to the FDA.
And why do these manufacturers have licenses to manufacture this right now?
Because of the recent studies that have been going on showing such great efficacy and safety for a various number of mental illnesses, specifically, namely, like depression. So psilocybin has breakthrough designation from the FDA. For major depressive disorder. So as soon as something like that happens, then you know, these suppliers continue to ramp up. But they've been able to, you know, anybody really has been able to since like 2013 or 2012 acquire these licenses and be able to work with these compounds in a clinical fashion.
Okay, so let's say we fast forward to the finish line. will you actually manufacture your own if at that point the finish line meant it was no longer a scheduled narcotic? Or how does it work for you, the end game?
The end game would be to have an FDA-approved medication for traumatic brain injury survivors. Once that diagnosis comes through, they would, instead of being prescribed anxiolytics or antidepressants for TBI-related symptoms that increase suicidal ideation, the number one cause of death after TBI being suicide, they would be prescribed our medication. So that's the end game, but there's so much more going on the front end right now, as far as, you know, how we're working with technology and diagnostics and really cognitive performance tools or training to increase things like peripheral vision, neck strength, processing speed, reaction time, and hand-eye coordination. So that's really what we're doing on the front end. And then also, you know, doing these white papers, understanding concussion is something that needs to happen. Like really, the whole TBI space as a whole needs to be improved. I'll just say that. So there's a lot of gaps that I've identified from being a patient. Mm-hmm. And then WeSauna is going to help fill in those gaps. And mainly what's happened, Sean, is like it's so fragmented. Like the neuropsych doesn't talk to the psychologist, doesn't talk to the neuroscientist, doesn't talk to the mental health therapist. So
yeah, this is why our system
is difficult.
This is why our system is fucked, because we need the mushrooms, right? We need, no, I'm serious. Like this is, God knows how long this is going to take. And this should be in humans right now. This should be in clinical trials. They're fucking shooting people up with an emergency authorization fucking vaccine. And we can't get trials with mushrooms in people. Like,
it's
what the fuck,
you know? It's scheduled, right? These compounds, and the reason governments do that, there's a number of different reasons, but in this case, like cannabis, marijuana is still a Schedule I drug. So think about this: the classification, the two classifications, no medicinal value and high abuse rate, right? So psilocybin and cannabis are two of those in that category, which we know aren't true. We know that there's
mushrooms.
Well, no, but there's a nationwide medical THC program, and there's a rec program, right? So we know both of those aren't true, yet it stays scheduled, right? So it's for a number of different reasons to incriminate populations. Yeah, on the federal level, yeah.
Right. But,
that being said, like it makes it harder to research. And that's why not a lot of people have done it, right? And so I agree with you. Like I still advocate for the responsible retreats that are happening now that we can get relief, right?
Yeah.
Into these patients. So I'm totally okay with those, as long as, and Oregon's coming online. Initiative 109, where, you know, if you're in the state of Oregon, you have a mental health diagnosis or a mental illness diagnosis, you can access psilocybin. Again, kind of under the guise that it's not federally legal,
right.
But it's a program that I think some states might adopt.
So there's going to be, like New York, when I got my cannabis card, there's going to be certain doctors that are going to opt into the program, and they're going to be able to refer you to whoever, you know, provides you with the psilocybin type.
Correct. Thing. Yeah. There'll be clinics, right? There'll be a clinical network, and that's amazing. That's progress. And then right now what's available to people that suffer from depression that is great efficacy is ketamine. And there's a lot of ketamine clinics, right?
I had a terrible, I know that that's a big thing, and I let them put a needle in my arm, and for 45 minutes, I felt like I was in a video game, but not like in a weird, okay, I felt like I was inside a game where I was falling into cubes of Jello, and I wasn't seeing anything. You know what I mean? I was just watching myself do it. And maybe because that was my first time, and that was the first step into the being that I needed to go into. Right.
Yeah.
But I just didn't feel great doing it. you know?
Yeah. So ketamine is a disassociative, and it sounds like you brought your psilocybin hat to a ketamine party, yeah. right? Where it's like, oh, I'm going to get visions and these, it's not that, right? But it does have has neuroprotective values. It does work really well in people with depression and some anxiety cases. And, what I would caution is just like, don't go, I don't know how your experience was, but like preparing is really important. You know, integrating is really important, talking about it. And then I like more low dose, sessions for people. And, you know, we actually, so we just finished we're finishing an acquisition, and we're going to have 5 ketamine clinics, but that's about, goes back to our conversation before.
Yeah. The business, what the fuck?
But with psychiatrist oversight, these will be, they've been run for 4.5 years and they're really responsibly done, yeah. and you'll prepare people right the right way. So they don't have, you know, a similar experience that, that you had, you know, they'll be well prepared.
So you said, acquisition. So like, are you guys living off of grants, or you're raising money and you're going and buying companies? Like what's the fabric of how do you say the company?
WESANA Health.
WESANA. How do you spell that?
WESANA.
What does it represent?
Sana means heal in Latin, uh-huh. and then we heal together, right? So the TBI community it's a pretty strong community of people just sharing information. And that's what we're creating is a community.
Okay. So, all right. So tell me about the business. How does this work? How are you paying? So, how do people get paid? Like, you have a company, or is everyone working for free?
No, we have a publicly traded company that we founded 7 months ago. We raised, our first round was $4 million to start the company off. And then that went to a lot of like the patent work and getting ready for, staffing up and creating our team. And then we raised, another, $16 million in February. And again, that was just to fund the growth and to, make sure our patents were, in line and getting ready. Go ahead.
This was all done through selling stock?
Through equity in the company. Yeah. So,
via stock?
So not stock. We weren't public at the time of the first two raises.
Oh, okay.
We weren't public.
So you guys then went public, and mm-hmm.
Went public.
Did your original investors, the $20 million, did they get their money out, or did they stay in, or how does that work?
Well, so when my partner Chad Bronstein, who runs Philo, has been unbelievable in setting up, just helping me with the business infrastructure and everything that needs to happen, and the understanding that needs to happen when we do go public. And that understanding includes, making sure that we have the right investors, right? It's not just about getting money. It's people that are buying into this story that we can create this medicine, and it is not a quick flip. It's not a 1 or 2 year project.
Yeah,
it's a long game, and that's what we did. Right. And so I think if you look now, we're on the Canadian Stock Exchange, and we're also on the OTCQB with an eye to go to the New York Stock Exchange by the end of the year. And if you look at, our stock, it stays really consistent because we have people that are bought in, that are bought into the mission. And this is not, like I said, recreating or creating a business to address the gaping holes in an industry. It happen overnight, but we've made a lot of progress, in the last 7 months
would the industry say that you have as well?
Yeah. Yeah. So
I'm asking that cause I have no idea what that would fucking look like.
Yeah. Well, for example, I think that you can measure a life science company, not by the number of patents that they file, but, by the number of INDs that they have open. So the new drug, investigational new drug applications. So, we're one of, 3 or 4 companies in the space that actually has, that's a publicly traded company that has an IND open, pre-IND number and opening an IND towards the end of the year. With the speed that we've moved, with our partnerships with the World Boxing Council, our partnership with the University of South Carolina, which is our research laboratory where we're researching the cutting edge diagnostics and exercises that WBC fighters, for example, can be partaking in to better protect themselves. The fact that we've made an acquisition with five psychiatrist oversight clinics that are doing both psychiatry work and ketamine. We have a SaaS platform that comes along with that, as well as a media platform. We're in discussions with MAPS as a partnership. So yeah, we execute, you know, it's like when we were in the room, right? It's that high metabolic rate that I wake up with and that we all wake up with, everyone on my team, and we move like,
You guys you're not working like fucking government employees. So how would you, and this is, so I get it now. All right. So even like a partnership, like with the NHL, would be huge for the stock, because also that would give people these partnerships are like building your war chest, essentially, on paper, and also, you know, legitimizing you guys more and more with every new partnership or acquisition or whatever it is. So how would you go into the NHL and present? Do you actually think you're ready to do that? Would you be able to present to them to get, and partnership would mean they would give you money to do research, more research, or they would give you money and buy a piece of your company? How would that look?
No, that'd probably be like a research partnership, but you know, and I don't want to sound cold. The NHL has to admit there's a problem to look for a solution.
Why? Right? Why? Why? Legally?
Well, legally, man. It all comes down to liability, and that's it, right? So like if they start bringing in better, it really is. If they start bringing
in fucking
better
doctors, whoever worked for them should be the ones saying, we need to do this.
Yeah. So what's happening though, Sean, I'll give you I don't need the NHL. I go to the agents, right? So that's what I've done with the UFC fighters. That's what I've done with WBC. We have a really nice research partnership with them, but that's what we've done like with the PFL, and then same with the NHL, right? They're independent contractors, these guys. So if we can get their buy-in, which we have a lot of it, then, you know, we're doing okay. And then we've got, you know, George Steinbrenner, the fourth on our board. So we've got, you know, the IndyCar, and we have the Yankees that are interested in this. And then really where our special sauce is, to be honest with you, is government and the Army. And that's why we chose University of South Carolina and the partnership with the Brainstorm Institute, because it's US SOCOM led, and you know, the Army and government, you know, ranks are really interested in how to enhance human and cognitive performance, right? And so like look at it less from a TBI standpoint now, and this is what we're moving into, really is a bigger narrative where we can improve neurological health across anybody.
Well, we have better soldiers. Our soldiers think faster. Our soldiers recover quicker.
And that's why the NHL should want it. Yeah, right? or like a specific owner. I feel like it's going to be an owner that has like specific buy-in that wants it for his team and sees the benefit and then sees it pay off, not in injury prevention. Forget about that, because you inherently give people that when you are training their brain, right? We train our body. We train our spirit, breathing techniques. Like, what are we doing to train the brain? And that's what our exercises can do. We can find the little deficiencies in these players, and we can optimize them from a balance standpoint, really important for hockey players or any athlete, from a hand-eye coordination, reaction time, processing speed standpoint. And then you have a better, healthier athlete, giving you a better product, you know?
Yeah.
And,
Here's what so I agree with you. You know, it's frustrating because I want the finished product, and I know that these are all the ingredients to that, but it's like, okay, we got to work on these fucking exercises, but like, where's the fucking mushrooms? All right. I want the firing. I want the fucking thing to fire open, and then I'll do all these exercises. But I get it.
Yeah.
I also get that when you're talking about government and Army, that makes the NHL look like a fucking M&M. I mean, that's a joke, right? Like,
yeah,
I mean, Elon Musk goes to get a fucking government contract, he goes to NASA. So I understand. It's giving me clarity on this whole thing. But, so in the meantime, I agree with you. It'd be nice to get like a Jim Dolan who, has been in recovery and understands it probably more than, or the guy in Indianapolis, Ursay, that owns the Colts.
Jim would be great because we actually work with, we're going to be working with Mount Sinai. So, right. I mean, it'd be, and I was just at the Mets game with Steve Cohen, who's a big donor into this space. So there's a lot of overlap, you know? So maybe we should reach out to, Dolan Cat.
Yeah. I mean, then one of these guys, them writing a check for $10 million because they see the long game in it. And they also are very interested in the space because of the assets they own. It makes sense. Like it totally makes sense. So is this US focused or Canada focused or how does that both? Okay.
Yeah, both. Yeah, yeah. When we build this, we'll build it once, but we are going to open up an IMPD. It's a little bit different, same as an IND in the United States in Canada. So, and then we have an eye for Europe. So if we think we're a little bit behind, they're about 10 years behind us. So we're going to do the same thing in Europe.
Wait, Europe is 10 years behind?
Yeah, with TBI, concussion awareness. It's really strange, but yeah, they're hurting still.
Well, I don't think they don't have as many sports that are, I guess, as violent as North American sports, football.
Well, believe it or not, soccer, you're 3.5 times more likely to get dementia just from heading the ball.
Yeah.
So they've been doing a lot of studies, man. It's pretty bad.
Wow.
Similar to hockey, right? They moved up the age of hitting, similar to like when you can head a ball.
Oh, you can't head a ball as a kid now?
Yeah, no, they've moved that up.
Oh,
yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah, it's just repetitive head trauma, like minimizing the damage, right? So
right. Yeah. Okay. So this is very interesting. All right, let's talk quickly because I think there's going to be a few people that are thinking like, I need a retreat. I need to fucking. Right. Where do they go to find this information? How do they start researching it?
Man, that's a really good question.
I mean,
there's a lot. Yeah.
I know it's dangerous to sort of, because it's, but like, are there message boards?
Yeah. I mean, there's Reddit. That's pretty good.
Right.
You know? And then you can seek it out. Like I said, right. The unregulated places, there are these retreats. I'm just very hesitant because I've never vetted any of them.
I understand. But so people are going to have to get online and they're going to have to do some work. What are some of the key words you would use to search something like this?
I mean, you can just search for, like I said, there's a lot of these places in one of the places that I do feel confident saying that is a reputable place is Synthesis in the Netherlands.
Okay. Great.
And so, there's that. I went to La Medicina in Peru. So I can say from experience for sure, Chris and Nori, that was one of the best experiences of my life.
And how did you find them?
So I got connected through Heroic Hearts Project, which is a 501c3 connecting veterans with psychedelic therapy or psychedelic retreats.
Okay.
And they vetted Jesse Gould, who's amazing, and everybody should check their organization out. So Heroic Hearts Project. We ended up subsidizing the treatment for the vets, and so athletes and executives went with veterans, so kind of that warrior spirit, and we drank the ayahuasca. It was right before the pandemic, so it was perfect timing. And
what did the ayahuasca do versus the psilocybin? How did you prefer one to the other? Did you feel different?
That's a loaded question, man. How much time you got?
Or just both were helpful.
Well, I would say, like, so ayahuasca, I drank Aya when I was 8 months into my psilocybin treatment.
Yeah.
And I felt the best I'd ever felt in years, right? And then that old saying, don't fix it if it's not broken. So I was really hesitant to go. But Jesse was one of the people that I met and his organization that I wanted to support through outreach. And he was testifying at a lot of the things I was. And I wanted to continue my healing journey. I knew there was more. There's always more to peel back. And I thought it was a really great idea for athletes and vets and execs to all kind of come together and heal together. Different traumas, different arenas, but same human emotions or trauma. So we went. I've always had a really big fear of death. And that's kind of governed my life a little bit differently in the sense of like how I view my kids. I have three young kids. There was just a lot of things I wanted to figure out. Mm-hmm. We drank three nights in a row. But the first night, I've had a lot of death around me, right? Like since I retired, which I'd never really experienced, my grandparents, Steve, Ray, and I wanted to figure that out. I wanted to like get some type of understanding or peace and know where they were, or feel it at least. And this medicine allowed me to do that every single night, on a deeper and deeper level. And so I just walked away. The overall, without getting too descriptive, is, you know, that
it's different.
You know,
it's different.
Yeah. It's the biggest lesson is I can stress less because I understand and I know where they are and where we're all going, guess, you know? And so without getting too into the weeds, it was a really great experience, but it was like, I'm talking, give your phone away, no service, no interaction with the outside world for 5 days. No internet and just a really,
it's
cool experience.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think like,
you would like it.
I think that what people need to understand is this isn't like going to a fucking psychiatrist appointment where you sit on a couch and you talk to some, you know, guy, a gentleman in slacks who looks good. And like, this is uncomfortable. And you probably shit yourself. You might piss yourself. I mean, you go on heavy trips.
You just purge. You purge.
Yeah, you throw up. Okay, so
that's the magic of the medicine, right? It makes you suffer again with all of these psychedelics. And I think the biggest takeaway is, people are always jumping in the stream and they're getting, you know, we're putting band-aids, we're pulling people out below the stream and we're never going upstream. What's going on with this person? Why do I keep jumping in? And that is extremely difficult to look at. And so this medicine, people just have to be prepared. We can prepare you in a really succinct way and get to know a lot about you and your trauma and create an environment where we will have a successful treatment for sure. That being said, nobody's sugarcoating this. At least I don't in this industry. This is difficult work.
Yeah.
But if you're up for it, then you can be guided through something that takes 5 hours and it will last, you know, smoking cessation. There's studies that people are still smoking, not touching cigarettes for over 3 years. Wow. These ceremonies done correctly can have an impactful impact on somebody's life and trajectory. And so, but yeah, man, it is not for the faint of heart. And you have to have that. The reason we're buying this psychiatrist these clinics is because we have to have oversight. You really have to take care.
Yeah.
But that being said, I mean, absolutely, unequivocally, I feel bad for even saying this because like I love, all I wanted to be was a dad, right? In this world.
Yeah.
And I held my wife's legs, like she probably won't want me saying that, but for every birth. And my psychedelic experiences rank higher than those experiences just because of the peace that it's allowed in my life to actually enjoy those kids and my relationships and my everyday interactions. It's been magical, man. Magical.
This is beautiful. Daniel Carcillo.
Wait, what have you tried? I want to know what else other than ketamine. Have you tried anything else?
Not in a controlled, like, okay. I would like to try the microdosing, but I up until 40 minutes ago, I thought like, oh, maybe there's somebody I can find. Right. But you can't even fucking do that now. If you do it, you're doing it on the black market. And I guess you're going to have to do some research to find out, you know? I mean, I feel like, listen, like I smoke, right? And I love to smoke. And, but I also smoked marijuana every single day of my whole entire professional career.
I haven't
stepped into the depths of what we're talking about, because part of me is probably a little scared. I still like my anger, you know? I think I've just found a balance, right? It gets me in trouble, but it also, I know I don't take it too far. Like, I guess what I'm saying is, why the whole microdosing thing is like, I want to experiment and I want to feel as best as I can feel, but I also don't want to go over the fucking ledge yet. Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I look at that beautiful little baby that you have, you know, more than enough reason to, you know, and you're figuring it out, man. We're all figuring it out, dude. I don't want to come on this podcast and sound like this is like,
no,
like, I don't want to make it sound like, okay, good.
No, you don't at all.
Because there's still so much work. There's so much work that you have to continue to do, you know, and life still happens, man. And, but what a microdose would allow you to do is just kind of take a step back, like be less reactionary and
I
you
could
know,
use.
Think things through.
We can talk about that offline. There's gotta be somebody in California, but,
good, man.
This has been great, dude. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. And, we'll talk soon.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I appreciate you having me on. That was one of the better combos I've had in a long time.
I liked it.
Yeah, buddy.
All right, brother.
Cool, man.
I'll let you get home. Sean. Thanks, man.
See you, buddy.
See you, bro. Episode 89, No Gruffs Given. Dynamic. We're looking for tools that are going to maximize our output. All right? We're looking for fucking contracts with the Army. Fuck the NHL. We're going big. We go big or we go home. Summer is over. Now is the time to put the work in. Now is the time that you have less sunlight. You have the ability to put the work in. You run in the dark. You run fucking whenever you can. You go into hibernation mode. Fall, we get comfy. We're on the look good, feel good program. We're slinging arrows anywhere we go. We walk into a room, we shoot a fucking arrow. Is there a dartboard in the room? Because I'm feeling pretty hot. That's how we operate. You buy lottery tickets. You do whatever the fuck you want as long as you go hard. And if you don't buy a Cameo, you're an asshole and you're not helping the cause. You're also missing out because I am on fire right now. I'm a lean, mean fighting machine. I'm light on my feet. And I want to do some damage. I want to spit some fire, like the kids used to say. I want to spit some fire. So book a fucking Cameo and let me do my thing. Episode 89, No Gruffs Given. I want you to listen to this song.
Get on me island, man. Min wadi mi yiddem ko antan holli mi holli mi ko njidin mi oduna aduna wadi mi yiddem.
Cold light, I live to love and adore you, it's all that I am.
It's all that I have. I'm the cold light I live. I only live for you. It's all that I am. It's all that I have. Mm-hmm. What me eat them? What me eat them? Men, what me eat them? Come out and look at me. For nani, 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 ni wahu. Oh, Johnny, 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 Johnny. So open up my eyes to a new light. I wandered round your darkened land all night, but I lift up my eyes to a new height. And indeed there would be time, but in the cold light I live, to love and adore you. It's all that I am. It's all that I have. And in the cold light I live, I'll only live for you. It's all that I am. It's all that I have.